know if the audience here knows it. I don't see any TVs here, but it has been projected by, I think, all of the networks that we won in Wisconsin.
Senator Sanders is on a bit of a winning streak right now. He has won 8 out of the last 9 contests, if I'm not mistaken, and recently won Colorado. Of course, when Secretary Clinton won a string of states, the calls for Bernie to get out of the race were loud and echoed. But of course, we're not going to hear that now that he seems to be on a bit of a winning streak. And Wisconsin was a big one, because heading into Wisconsin, several weeks out, the numbers were not on his side, and it looked like Hillary Clinton might get that state. But he vigorously campaigned in the state and eventually won it. So, yay Wisconsin, on to the next one, right? No. Because a lot of the red states especially have been putting a lot of voter restrictions in play. And this election, there are more of those restrictions in play than have ever been. And of course, with the Supreme Court striking down the Voting Rights Act, this will be the first election in 50 years where the Voting Rights Act was not in place. So yes, we celebrated the win in Wisconsin, but we also pointed out that voter restrictions and voter ID are a problem.
It has never occurred to me, not for one second, to try to figure out a way to keep people from voting because they might be voting against me.
At ballotpedia.org, it's a website that tells you about all the voting restrictions, all the voting laws, all the potentially pending voting laws. Even if you don't have these draconian voting laws in your state, it gives you information about how to vote in your state. And over on ballotpedia.org, as of April 2016, and I'm quoting here, 33 states enforced voter identification requirements. A total of 19 states required voters to present photo identification, while 14 accepted other forms of identification. In some states, a voter who is unable to present valid identification may still be permitted to vote without casting a provisional ballot. This is known as a non-strict requirement. In 9 of the 19 states that require a photo ID, the requirement is non-strict. In 12 of the 14 states that require non-photo identification, the requirement is non-strict. In the remaining states, voters without valid forms of identification are required to cast provisional ballots. Provisional ballots generally don't get counted. And so Senator Sanders called out Walker and the Wisconsin Republicans in their state in his victory speech after he won. And Walker was quick to respond over on Fox News.
So we make it easy to vote. You can vote same day voter registration. You just got to have that voter ID along with. But we also make it hard to cheat. And that's the difference. You should look at the facts.
So he says, no. Senator Sanders doesn't have a right. He needs to look at the facts. Well, let's look at the facts. The justification for voter ID laws. Now remember, voter fraud, in-person voter fraud, is a felony for which you can go to prison and or pay gigantic fines. So the motivating factor for a lot of people to vote, let's say you want your candidate to win, and so you're going to find a way to cast another ballot because your ballot, your one ballot, is going to make all the difference. Now, in aggregate, of course, votes make a difference, but nobody is going to risk going to prison in order to cast an extra ballot for their chosen candidate. Presidential elections are generally pretty high turnout, but off-year elections, which are very, very important, say 2014 or 2010, those are as or even more important than election years. Why? Because that's when we choose, first of all, the entire House of Representatives and one-third of the Senate. But those elections, especially recently, have had very low turnout. This from the Washington Post. General election voter turnout, this is from back in 2014, for the 2014 midterms was the lowest that it's been in any election cycle since World War II, according to the United States Election Project. Just 36.4% of the voting eligible population cast ballots as of last Tuesday. Remember, this is from 2014. Continuing a steady decline in midterm voter participation that has spanned several decades. The results are dismal, but not surprising. Participation has been dropping since the 1964 election when voter turnout was at nearly 49%. The last time voter turnout was so low during the midterm cycle was in 1942. Only 33.9% of eligible voters cast ballots. Voter turnout during the presidential elections, as a rule, significantly higher. More than 58% of eligible voters cast ballots in 2012, and nearly 62% did so in 2008. By contrast, only 41% of eligible voters voted in 2010 and 40.4% in 2006. Maine had the highest turnout with 59%, while Indiana the lowest at 28%. So if the motivation to vote, to cast another ballot, and of course the punishment is a felony, couple that with the fact that voter turnout is the lowest that it has been in many decades, what is the real reason behind putting up these voter ID laws, which, by the way, are going to cause that participation rate to drop even further? So, yes, Governor Walker, let's look at the facts.
All right, let's look at the facts. There's the fact that despite dire warnings of voter fraud, a Wisconsin federal district court judge ruled that the law's defenders, and I'm quoting here, could not point to a single instance of known voter impersonation occurring in Wisconsin at any time in the recent past. Not one. And the fact that, as Ari Berman writes in The Nation, the law could block 300,000 registered voters from the polls. That's 9% of the electorate, with voters of color and student voters disproportionately affected. Already, people are being forced to stand in long lines to cast early ballots in Wisconsin, thanks in part to the voter ID requirement, and the problem is only expected to be worse on Election Day on Tuesday. And just this morning, on the final day of early voting, the statewide voter registration system crashed, causing delays in voting. There are also reports that people couldn't get ID cards at the DMV during the outage. The ID cards, of course, they needed to vote.
So Ballotpedia is a good site on this one, and so, with respect to this subject, and so is ProPublica. ProPublica is also keeping a story where they have constant updates to it to tell you everything that you need to know about these voter ID laws. Because remember, the Republicans have been working for years. Republicans. Only Republicans. And why? Because they know that low voter turnout will get them more than likely will get them the election. So this from ProPublica, the question is, as a registered voter, I thought I always had to supply some form of ID during an election. Here's the fact. Prior to the 2006 election, no state ever required a voter to produce a government-issued photo ID as a condition to voting. Indiana in 2006 became the first state to enact a strict voter ID law that was upheld 2 years later by the Supreme Court. And for people who are opponents of the law, voting law opponents contend that these laws disproportionately affect elderly, minority, and low-income groups that tend, here it is, to vote Democratic. Obtaining photo ID can be costly and burdensome, while some states with strict laws offer a free state ID for people without any other way to vote. These IDs do require documents like a birth certificate, which can cost up to $25 in some places, and it can take a long time to get. According to a study from NYU's Brent Brennan Center, 11% of voting age citizens lack the necessary photo ID, while many people in rural areas have trouble accessing the ID offices. A lawsuit filed against Alabama in early 2015 cites the example of a high schooler who can't vote because she lacks a driver's license. According to the suit, she needs to get a state-issued voter ID at the DMV, but the one nearest to her is only open one day per month, and there's no public transportation to another DMV 40 miles away. There was one state I was hearing about recently that they made it where you could only go to one DMV office to get this particular ID. And that DMV was at the end of a long road where public transportation didn't go and was outside the city. Now, who is not going to be able to get there? Ah, yes, poor people. Poor people who what? Generally vote Democratic. But we have to do something about voter fraud. Remember, there's no voter fraud. There are a handful of cases. This was George W. Bush tried to make this case after he became president, because 2000 was a very contentious election. And he said, you know what, let's just find a way to get people the hell off the ballot, because they said the problem was voter fraud, but the real problem was election fraud. But we can't have our attention going there. We need to go after the individual voters and scrape them off the rolls because voter fraud. So this, according to ProPublica, just how well funded are fears of voter fraud? There have only been a small number of fraud cases resulting in a conviction. A New York Times analysis from 2007 identified 120 cases filed by the Justice Department over 5 years. These cases, many of which stem from mistakenly filled out registration forms or misunderstanding voter eligibility, resulted in 86 convictions. So the people that did commit the crime weren't committing the crime to try to cast an extra ballot. They just didn't understand the paperwork. Analysis by News 21, a national investigative reporting project, identified 10 voter impersonation cases out of 2,068 alleged election fraud cases since 2000, or one out of every 15 million prospective voters. Out of every 15 million prospective voters, that's not going to swing an election. So honestly, why do we need these laws? One of the most vocal supporters of strict voter ID laws was then Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott, who's now the state's governor. And he told the Houston Chronicle in 2012 that his office has persecuted about 50 cases of voter fraud in recent years. 50. Remember, there are tens of millions of people in Texas. 50 people voting fraud, even if fraudulently, isn't going to make a difference. Glenn Grothman, representative in Wisconsin, recently gave an on-camera interview to a reporter in which he spilled the beans about voter ID.
Benson talking with Republican Congressman Glenn Grothman about voter turnout. Charles asks us if a Republican congressman can win the presidential election in November, and here's what Grothman says.
Well, I think Hillary Clinton is about the weakest candidate the Democrats have ever put up, and now we have photo ID, and I think photo ID is going to make a little bit of a difference as well.
You're not allowed to say it out loud. We know why they want strict voter ID laws, because it's going to help them win the election. So, how many voters might be turned away or dissuaded by the laws? And could they really affect the election? Here's where it gets a little wobbly. According to the Brennan Center, about 11% of U.S. citizens, or roughly 21 million citizens, don't have government-issued photo ID. This figure doesn't represent all voters likely to vote, just those eligible to vote. A 2012 analysis by Reuters and research firm Ipsos of data culled from 20,000 voter interviews found that those who lack valid photo ID tended to be young people, those without college educations, Hispanics, and the poor. Much of the academic literature finds that voter ID laws have an outsized effect on minorities. A working paper from researchers at the University of California, San Diego, found that states with strict voter ID law saw a significant decrease in turnout among minority and immigrant voters and an increase in the participation gap between white and non-white voters. In 2012, a trial over Wisconsin's voter ID law, the plaintiff estimated that about 300,000 folks did not have the ID and attempted to analyze the demographic breakdown. An expert for the defense put the number between 100 and 300,000 and called the demographics into open question. As for the potential effect on the election, one analysis by Nate Silver at 538.com estimates they could decrease voter turnout anywhere between 0.8 and 2.4%. It doesn't sound like a wide margin, but it all depends on the electoral landscape. Now, I mentioned a little bit ago the costs associated with these voter ID laws. And the states said, hey, no, it's fine. We will make sure that you get a free photo ID, but there are other costs associated with it. The cost of getting there, the cost of maybe having to get your birth certificate in case you need it, someone to watch the kids, things of that nature. And it has been called by some outlets a poll tax, because that's exactly what it is. And back during the days of poll taxes, we had all kinds of ways to keep people away from the ballot boxes. One of those ways was literacy tests.
I just think it should be, well, for one thing, a little more difficult to vote. There's nothing unconstitutional about literacy tests.
Actually, there is something unconstitutional about literacy tests.
It's a scary question. Just how much do Americans know about President Obama's accomplishments or the Republican presidential candidates? Jesse Waters in Jesse Waters' World hit the streets to find out.
What do you guys think about Marco?
Polo.
Marco Rubio.
Never heard of him.
He's a Republican senator out of Florida.
I don't like him.
Wow, there you go. This along with studies showing Americans are poorly informed on government and politics. So is it time to revisit a test for people to be able to vote? Joining us round to debate this, conservative columnist Ann Coulter and executive director of the Accountability Project, Nomiki Akunst. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
All right, Ann, does it bother you that your vote counts as much as somebody that does not know what's going on?
More than I can say. I just think it should be, well, for one thing, a little more difficult to vote. There's nothing unconstitutional about literacy tests.
So which states have the toughest voter ID laws? Indiana, Georgia, Tennessee, Kansas, Mississippi, North Dakota, Virginia, Wisconsin, and Texas have the toughest laws. These states won't allow voters to cast a regular ballot without first showing valid photo ID. Other states with photo ID laws offer more flexibility by providing voters with several alternatives. Has there been a recent surge in voter ID legislation around the country? Yes. The report by NYU's Brennan Center for Justice cites primarily big Republican gains in the 2010 midterms, which turned voter ID laws into a major legislative priority. Aside from Rhode Island, all voter ID legislation has been introduced by Republican majority legislators. News 21 also has this report on the close affiliation between the bill sponsors and the conservative nonprofit group ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. Hold up. ALEC, a man named Paul Weyrich, helped start ALEC. And during a speech in the 80s, he said exactly what he wanted to do about the fact that too many people were voting.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
And ALEC is now responsible for the majority of these laws across the country. This from ProPublica. Republican figures have championed such laws. In a now infamous remark, not unlike the one made by Grothman earlier, Mike Terzai, majority leader of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, praised the state's legislative accomplishments, including passing voter ID law at a 2012 Republican State Committee meeting. Quote, voter ID, which is going to allow Governor Romney to win the state of Pennsylvania, done, he said. Once again, these are things that you are not supposed to say out loud. But we're now learning that even inside of Republican circles, when they are talking about these laws, when they are drafting these laws, even they don't believe that voter fraud is a problem. The problem for them is the fact that too many people are getting out and voting. And what happens when too many people get out and vote? They tend to vote Democratic.
That was Governor Scott Walker describing Wisconsin's voter ID law that was in effect for the first time this year in a presidential election. The problem is that it's not necessarily that easy. For example, try getting a free ID card from the DMV if you live in Sauk City, Wisconsin, where the DMV office is open only on the fifth Wednesday of any month. In 2016, only 4 months, March, June, August, November, have 5 Wednesdays. And if one of those 4 days doesn't work out for you this year, well, then you got to make the 24-mile drive to the DMV in Madison. And often what can seem relatively small inconveniences like that are enough to keep people from getting an idea, from casting a ballot. So why did the Republican-led Wisconsin legislature institute a voter ID requirement? Did it have something to do with the fact that voter ID laws tend to disproportionately impact students and people of color who are more likely to vote for Democrats?
Myth. This from the AFL-CIO website. Photo IDs are already required for everything from boarding a plane to getting a library card. So it makes sense to require a picture ID for voting. No, it's not true. Fact. Unlike boarding a plane or obtaining a library card, voting is a fundamental right. Even though the Supreme Court won't affirm it, it is not a privilege. Over the course of history, groups on the margins of society have fought and sometimes died to protect the right to vote. Voting is very crucial to our democracy. And by the way, they say, hey, you need an ID to get on a plane. Partially true. It certainly helps you get on the plane faster, but if you look at the TSA website, you will see that if you do not have it, they have other ways to verify you. Myth: voter ID laws do not disenfranchise anyone. Fact: requiring photo ID identification to vote will disproportionately affect voters of color, senior citizens, the disabled, young voters, and the working poor. 18% of citizens ages 65 and older do not have a current government-issued photo ID. This amounts to more than 6 million senior citizens. And here's the big one for them. Among African-American voting age citizens, 25% do not have a current government-issued ID, compared with 8% of white voting age citizens. At least 15% of voting age citizens earn less than $35,000 per year and do not have a valid government issued photo ID. About 18% of ages 18 to 24 don't have a photo ID with current address and name. In some states, student IDs issued by colleges and universities don't fit these strict laws and burdensome requirements. Remember, you can't use your college ID, but in those states, you can usually use your concealed carry permit. Why? Because if you're in college, you're more likely to vote Democratic, and if you're a gun nut, you're more likely to vote Republican.
Today, we got another window into why Wisconsin Republicans passed this law from a man named Todd Albaugh, who served as chief of staff to a Republican state senator in Wisconsin. Albaugh says he was there when the law was conceived in 2011. In a Facebook post this week, he wrote, "You want to know why I left the Republican Party as it exists today? I was in the closed Senate Republican caucus when the final round of multiple voter ID bills was being discussed. A handful of the GOP senators were giddy about the ramifications and literally singled out the prospects of suppressing minority and college voters."
This from Frontline: why voter ID laws aren't really about fraud. Voter ID laws don't address, quoting from the article here, what appears to be a more common source of voter fraud: mail-in absentee ballots. A Frontline analysis of voting laws nationwide found that only 6 of the 31 states that require ID at the polls applied those standards by absentee voters, who are generally whiter and older than in-person voters. And 2 states with strict voter ID policies for in-person voters, Rhode Island and Georgia, have recently passed bills that allow anyone to mail in a ballot. Voter fraud generally rarely happens. When it does, election law experts say it happens more often through mail-in ballots than people impersonating eligible voters at the polls. So, who votes absentee? This is also important. Absentee voters tend to be older and whiter than in-person voters. In 2012, nearly half of the 46% of mail-in voters were aged 60 or older. More than 75% were white, according to an analysis by Michael McDonald, a political science professor at the University of Florida, who tracks demographic trends in voting. Older white Americans generally are more likely to vote Republican, and African Americans, who overwhelmingly vote Democratic, are less likely to use mail-in ballots. So, by not going after what is a potential source of voter fraud, because it allows more white people, because it's the way that more white people tend to vote, and then going after a way in-person voting and having strict ID laws on that, because African Americans, which overwhelmingly over 90% vote Democratic, yeah, we need to have some strict voter ID laws for them. Quoting again, in Texas, for example, challengers to the law cited an African American grandma who could not afford the $25 to purchase her birth certificate to get an ID, and an elderly African-American veteran and longtime voter who was turned away at the polls in 2013 despite having 3 types of ID because none qualified under the new law, even though they had voted in all the other elections. And new research from the Government Accountability Office, an independent agency that prepares reports for members of Congress, suggests that voter ID laws are having an impact at the polls. Turnout dropped among both young people and African Americans in Kansas and Tennessee after new voter ID requirements took effect in 2012, the study found. Voter ID laws have been sponsored by Republicans and passed overwhelmingly by Republican legislatures. A conservative U.S. Circuit Judge, Richard Posner, in a recent scathing critique of these laws, calling the expressed concern about fraud a mere fig leaf, and they instead appear to be aimed at limiting voting by minorities, particularly blacks.
So I've been a Republican for a long time. It was that moment, Chris, in that room, in the Senate Republican caucus, when I heard people, a party that I had fought for over 30 years of my life, actually giddy and happy and talking about how we can take people's constitutional rights away, or at least impede them in order to hang on to power. And now you have a group of people in the state legislature, particularly in the Senate Republican caucus, who want to impede people's voting rights. That's the point where I said, I can't do it anymore. I can't be a Republican. I can't keep going to caucuses because this party no longer represents me and what I believe in. Republicans used to fight for voting rights, and here they were taking it away. So yes, the point is, this was a poignant point in my life. I remember it very clearly. And certainly the point in that room that day was, how do we do this quickly? Because there was a lot of recalls going on in Wisconsin that time. How do we do it quickly so that we can make sure that we hang on to power in the future?
That's a man named Todd Albaugh, who recently appeared on MSNBC. And he was in the room when the law was being drafted. And in that room, they were openly saying that they were giddy about keeping people away from the polls. So now we know the problem isn't fraudulent voting. The problem is voting at all, turning out to the polls, especially in large numbers, during an election. One more point about this. There is a huge push right now to overturn the 17th Amendment. Prior to the direct election of senators, they used to be appointed by the states. So if you've got a Republican state governor, then the state would appoint the senators that go to the federal Senate. Quoting from U.S. News and World Report, ratified in 1913, the 17th Amendment established the direct election of senators who had previously been appointed by the state legislatures. Since 2010, a number of big-name conservatives have arrayed themselves behind the repeal, including recently passed Justice Antonin Scalia, Ted Cruz, and radio talk show host Mark Levin. Proponents of repeal placed states' rights ahead of the democratic process. In justifying his call for repeal, one conservative writer explained the Constitution did not create direct democracy. It established a constitutional republic. Its goal was to preserve liberty, not to maximize popular sovereignty. And then there's this whole republic, not a democracy thing that Republicans love to talk about. Follow me here. This sentiment has deep roots in modern conservatism. The slogan of the John Birch Society captured conservatives' wariness about mass democracy. In the early 1960s, the right furiously denounced Supreme Court rulings on congressional apportion that established a one-man, one-vote principle. And the Voting Rights Act of 1965 received special opprobrium, as Jeffrey Kabbah's service showed in Rule in Ruin, A History of the Decline of Moderate Republicans. Senator Barry Goldwater believed the Voting Rights Act would be the end of the democratic process and the Republican form of government we have so long enjoyed. Another conservative Republican argued, in language reminiscent of today's battles over voter ID laws, that the more of these people who are pressured into registering and voting, the greater our party will suffer. Yet this skepticism about democracy and universal suffrage never receives top billing when conservatives call for voter ID laws. In part, that's because when opposition to voting doesn't go over well in the general public, as conservative writer Matthew Vadim discovered in 2011 after his piece, Registering the Poor to Vote is Un-American, generated intense backlash. And in part, it's because conservatism's anti-democratic strain coexists uneasily with its anti-establishment populism, a contradiction that the movement has never really reconciled. Unable to craft an anti-democratic message that is both ideologically consistent and publicly palatable, Republicans instead fall back on the canard of voter fraud. So the first election in 50 years where we didn't have the Voting Rights Act, a very vigorous campaign by Republican legislatures and ALEC, which writes the laws in order to stop you from voting, both openly and privately saying how much they do not like the fact that you have the right to vote. And they would very much like you to stay away from the polls. And they would really, 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 if you could just stay away from the polls, especially in 2016, God, that would really freaking help them out. Because they have two nutbags right now. And one of these nutbags is going to get the nomination. It's hard to tell which one. It's likely going to be Trump. So if you could please, please just stay away from the polls. Maybe President Trump or President Cruz will be what you're hearing next out of your speakers. Uh-uh. Let's call them what they are. They're voter suppression laws. They're anti-democratic. They're trying to steal your voice. They don't want to hear from you. They don't care what you think. Stop turning out to vote, you dingy. They don't care. Let's call them what they are. Voter suppression. And let's fight them.
I was asked the hardest question in my political life. Do you agree with Donald Trump that Ted Cruz is the biggest liar in politics? Too close to call.
Have you seen any of the Paul Ryan for President ads? No? Oh, well, let me tell you, you may not think that you have seen the ads, but let me blow your mind. You have already seen the Paul Ryan for President ads. So the Koch brothers, who essentially own the Republican Party, made it pretty clear at the beginning of the election season that who they want for their guy is to be Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin that we talked about in the last segment, who's trying to keep people away from the polls, whose voter ID law probably kept somewhere between 100 and 300,000 people away from the polls. So Scott Walker gets into the race. They hold their breath. They're not shoveling money at him yet. And then he doesn't last very long in the race. He has to drop out of the race. So who are they going to go for now? Well, your front runners are Cruz and Trump, and really, really, it's just Trump. But Trump is starting to lose some of his edge and is getting in a more competitive race with Ted Cruz. So who do the Koch brothers want now? They've decided that they want Paul Ryan to be president. So how in the hell is that going to work out? Well, first step is what Rachel Maddow recently called political exertion.
Political exertion, in some cases well-funded political exertion, that it's not intended to elect any one particular candidate. It's instead intended to block the election, or at least block the nomination of a particular candidate. A particular candidate that a portion of the Republican Party finds so odious, they will do almost anything to stop him from becoming the standard bearer of their party. The hawkish editorial page of the Washington Post is now running increasingly upset, increasingly harsh editorials, overtly begging Republican leaders to do something to stop Mr. Trump from being nominated. The conservative National Review magazine devoted a whole issue to what they called a symposium against Donald Trump. So there is a real effort on the right. It's not like people aren't trying. You keep hearing people saying in the pundit world, like, oh, why didn't anybody stop Donald Trump when they had the chance? Why isn't anybody trying to stop him now? There is an effort. It's not like people aren't trying. They're trying.
A party that is now tearing down its own frontrunner. And they say, what? No, wait a minute. Maybe they can just all get behind Ted Cruz. Let me let you in on a little secret. Nobody likes Ted Cruz. That's why Mike Lee is the only guy from the Senate to come out behind him. And Mike Lee is another one of these super duper hard right individuals. No one who works with Ted Cruz likes Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz won his election in Texas because the GOP in that state very heavily tilted it for him. You wonder how somebody so extreme came out of Texas, because they took the initial day, the day where they had their primary for senator, And they talked very openly about this. They put it on a day where nobody would want to come out. You know, they put it in the, you know, in the middle of the week, you know, and you know, end of the month, you know, sometime when nobody's really paying really any attention. And they got very low turnout. And then for the election, they did the same thing again. They put the voting day on a day where they were pretty sure that nobody was going to turn out. There's over 30 million people in Texas. And over 680,000 people voted for Ted Cruz. And he now represents the entire state of Texas. He's one of the two senators from that state. But he's an absolute upside down and inside out extremist. Even his own not constituents, clearly they voted for him because he just won. He won the state of Texas. But the people that work with him, his coworkers, do not like him. So who's the other? Oh, Donald Trump, right? Yeah, they don't like Donald Trump. They don't want him to win. And so now they're coming out very, very heavily, tearing down their own front runner. They're saying, and remember, this goes, they don't care what you think, voters. And you're voting for Donald Trump? Oh my God, why are you voting for Donald Trump? They don't care what you think. And they're going to put Paul Ryan in there instead. So yeah, National Review has come out against him. A lot of very prominent Republicans have come out against him. And, of course, conservative talk radio. Some of them are saying yay to the Donald. But not all of them are.
Did you vote for Donald Trump if he is the nominee? And last night, I know how I would have answered this, but I don't know the right way to answer that at CPAC, at the debate last night.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, but I think they all answered it improperly.
Yeah, I do too. The answer is no. And you know why? Because I care a hell of a lot more about the country than I do the stupid Republican Party. The end.
Beck is leading the Never Trump movement right now, and I just saw him this morning. I suppose I'm dating the show now. Just saw him this morning on Meet the Press. Chuck Todd brought him on to talk about the Never Trump movement. So this is a thing. And Trump, on the one hand, is winning all of these freaking states. But then on the other hand, he sees the party trying to stop him. But the way the conservatives, the Republican Party and the conservative media, the crap that they've been feeding their audience for years, the way they've been talking to their audience for years. Daily Show recently just did a great segment on this where they showed that really Donald Trump is just saying all the things, he's echoing all of the things that we've been hearing on conservative media and conservative talk radio, conservative blogs for a long time. He's saying all that stuff, and now that stuff is resonating with the voters. And so, once again, on the one hand, he's winning all these states, but on the other hand, he sees them trying to stop his nomination. And there has been a lot of violence at Trump rallies. And Trump promised that if he doesn't get the nomination, if he goes to the convention with a lot of votes or with a lot of delegates and he doesn't get the nomination, he's promising more violence.
If we're, 100 short, and we're at 1,100 and somebody else is at 500 or 400 because we're way ahead of everybody, I don't think you can say that we don't get it automatically. I think you'd have riots. I'm representing a tremendous, many, many millions of people.
Paul Ryan, for pretty much his entire political career, has been pushing this idea of makers and takers, right? He says the rich people are the makers and you poor working class people, you're the takers. He has introduced the Ryan budget, which he calls the Path to Prosperity, which, remember, great title. It's the exact opposite of what it is, and it just slashes and burns all the social programs. But he recently came out and he gave a speech in front of some Republican supporters, some young folks. And he said, that whole makers and takers thing, I was wrong about that. I shouldn't have said that. I didn't mean that. Because what we need in America is we all need to work together because we're all in this together and we're all Americans. And this toxic political, I didn't pull the clip, I'm sorry. This toxic political environment out there, he's trying to be the statesman. That's a Paul Ryan ad that you just saw. You didn't realize it, but that's a Paul Ryan ad. Then Paul Ryan was asked, do you want to run for president? And he says, oh, man. Oh, why do you guys always do this to me? Oh. So when he was asked if he wanted to be Speaker of the House, first he said no. Then he said, if it brings the party together, okay, all right, fine, right? And then he becomes Speaker of the House. Now, as Speaker of the House, and remember, the Republicans love his budget, which screws working people, screws poor, and screws working people. I know he's trying to say that that's the old Paul Ryan, this is the new Paul Ryan, but he really is the same guy, but he's positioning himself to be the candidate now. So they ask him, do you want to run for president? He says, if I want to be president, I would have run for president. I'm not running for president. And then recently he said, you know what? If it brings the party together, ah, here we go. But wait a minute. It's not just Trump and Cruz in the race. The hell are you talking about, Melvin? No, you're right. It's not just these two in the race. There is another guy in the race, John Kasich. But John Kasich only has a little over 100 delegates, not many, when Cruz is over 500 and Trump is over 700. And he's won one state. He won his own state and gave just the monster victory speech of all victory speeches. What are you doing? But he's staying in the race. So why is he staying in the race? He doesn't have a path forward. If Kasich won the rest of the states in places where the delegates are proportionally handed out, he has no path forward. If he won every single contest coming up, I think there's 700 some delegates still left. If he won every single contest all the way to the convention, he still wouldn't have enough delegates. So why the hell is he staying in the race? Because he believes that if he goes to the convention, it's going to be him.
When we get to the convention, they're going to wonder who can beat Hillary, which I consistently do, and they do not. And then they also are going to look about who could be president. Now, we have one guy with no experience and the other guy whose experience amounts to shutting down the government and calling the majority leader a liar. That is not the way in which you get things done in this country. In the fall, I will be able to run a very aggressive campaign in the state of Wisconsin, and nobody else can. I mean, I beat Hillary in the fall in Wisconsin by 14, and everybody else gets slaughtered. It'll all be fine over time.
So his strategy is to go all the way to the convention, because here's the way it works. When you win the state contest that are going on right now, the state-by-state contest, when you win the state-by-state contest, you get delegates. Those delegates are dedicated to you in the first round of voting. Those are automatically yours, which is how if you go to the convention with enough delegates, you get the nomination. Where it gets wobbly, though, is the second ballot, the third ballot, the fourth ballot, if nobody wins that first round. And that's what Kasich is hoping for. But the GOP and the Koch brothers, yes, the Koch brothers have recently come out and said, our new guy, because remember, they want to spend over $800 million in the upcoming election. They've said that our new guy, and they're not being secretive about this anymore, they said our new guy is Paul Ryan. We would like Paul Ryan to be the nominee. So Paul Ryan's going to go to the convention and they're going to try to make him the nominee, and they're trying to position him as this thoughtful, caring, compassionate, middle of the road, you know, it doesn't play these dirty politics and all the rest. And they said, we would like him to be our guy. But wait a minute, the Kochs are going to put $800 million behind trying to make Paul Ryan president. Is Paul Ryan really going to work for you? And can you go to a contested convention, pick somebody who hasn't even won a single state like they did in 68, and have that person become president? If past is prologue, if history tells us anything, the answer is no. But it's not going to stop him from trying. So we know how we got to the Republican Party as they currently are. We know how we ended up with a candidate like Trump. We know how we ended up with an extremist like Cruz. And by the way, Kasich isn't that great either. But he's not as wacky as the other two, so he can't seem to win any states. So we know how we got here, but then the election itself, I think that's what's made the owners of the Republican Party, the establishment, really, really look at what they've been doing over the last number of years, to really look at how they've conducted themselves as a party. Because yes, they say a lot of wacky things to you on right-wing channels and right-wing blogs and right-wing postings and right-wing radio. They say all these wacky things to you, but all they really want is for you just to turn out and vote for them when they come forward with those ideas. And things have gone awry because someone else who's much better at communicating came out and started pushing all those things, started saying all the political correctness. And why won't the president call it Islamic terrorism, Islamic extremism, the Mexicans? And somebody comes out and says all this stuff. And they go, oh, crap, now he's the front runner, and now he looks unstoppable. And even when he says he's going to shoot voters, he doesn't lose.
I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose any voters.
And you can be forgiven for thinking that you have been watching children this entire time, because the way he communicates is at a fourth grade level or less. I've talked to a teacher who said, actually, it's not even fourth grade. It's like second. And when he talks like a five-year-old, and when he talks in these short sentences, these short to the point, I'm great, I'm awesome, I'm going to make America great, it's the Mexicans. He never really uses polysyllabic words. You know, he doesn't use long sentences, you know, and he doesn't work off of a script either. And he considers that a strength. He's like, I don't work off a script. And he considers that a strength. Well, sure, it is if you're saying something of substance. And I thought it was just me that heard these things when he spoke, because the media has been giving him a pass on it. They've been letting him do his interviews on the phone, which puts him on more and more media. But recently, Trump sat down with Anderson Cooper, and Anderson Cooper called out exactly what it is.
After saying that you were going to spill the beans about Heidi Cruz, you retweeted an unflattering picture of her next to a picture of your wife.
I thought it was a nice picture of Heidi. I thought it was fine.
Come on.
I thought it was fine. She's a pretty woman.
You're running for president of the United States.
Excuse me. I didn't start it.
But, sir, with all due respect, that's the argument of a five-year-old.
I didn't start it. No, it's not the
argument. The argument of a five-year-old is he started it.
You would say that. That's the problem with our country.
Every parent knows a kid who says he started it.
Excuse me.
No, I didn't. He started it. It was, no, I didn't. That's not what it's, a million times infinity, And naturally, this causes some uneasiness in the Republican Party. Crap, this guy's our front runner. And now our two front runners are fighting with each other, trading barbs about each other's spouses. And I remember quite a few conservative pundits says, oh man, why are they doing this about the spouses? And then Sean Hannity goes, oh man, the spouses, why are they talking about each other's spouses? They should be talking about the issues. And once again, Republicans, you brought yourself here because you want the spouses to be off limits. He said, spouses are now off limits. Cruz has said it too. Spouses are now off limits. But hold on a second. Spouses, even if they're the first lady, have never, ever been off limits for you folks.
Obama doesn't have a butt. Compared to his wife, he really doesn't have a butt.
Yeah, no, I didn't doctor that clip. That's actually what he said.
When you see her in a bathing suit, man, it looks like a man. And there are the photos of she's either keeping a banana in her pants. I mean, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Or she's a man.
Okay, we have to keep the spouses out of this. That is unless they are Democratic. They are the wife of a Democratic president.
First Lady Michelle Obama was just seen ordering a cheeseburger, fries, and a chocolate shake at a joint in D.C. The meal was over 1,500 calories, roughly the equivalent of eating a live raccoon.
The equivalent, roughly the equivalent of eating a live raccoon. Live raccoons, are those more calories than a dead raccoon?
Our First Lady does not project the image of women that you might see on the cover of the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue.
Okay, so I think I've made my point. You don't get to say, spouses are off limits, after you have spent years tearing apart Michelle Obama, not for things that she did. Not for things that she said, but for saying she looks like a man. She has a banana in her pants. She eats live rodents. You don't get to do that and then cry foul when this kind of dumb thing breaks out on your side of the aisle.
2 days ago, he said he would take his pants off and moon everybody. And that's fine. Nobody reports that.
He's just a big poopy pants. And this is the dialogue that's happening over on the right now. And they've tried to make light of it to a degree. Ha ha. You know, this is just the way things are. Sometimes, you know, it's not a big deal. Look at me. Look, listen to the crazy things that I'm going to say.
I'm a maniac. And everyone on this stage
is stupid, fat, and ugly.
No, no, no. We are not in absolute panic mode right now. Everything is just fine. Our party is just fine. Everything is going great. We are not quietly freaking out right now. Oh, my God.
My party is going batshit crazy.
Frank Luntz is a Republican pollster. He does focus groups for the Republicans. And after a recent debate between the GOP candidates, Frank Luntz had everybody sitting down in a room. They all watched the same debate together. And he asked them on Fox News. Now, he's on Fox all the time. He asked the crowd or the focus group on Fox News, what did you think about what you just saw?
Again, I don't know how happy y'all at Fox are going to be, but I want a word or phrase to describe tonight's debate, and I'm going to start in the second row.
Sophomoric.
Embarrassment.
Disappointing.
Shameful.
Despicable.
Angering.
Low on substance. Disgusting.
Schoolyard brawl.
Okay, now this ain't good, because there are millions and millions of people who watch the debate tonight, and this is the most negative response I've had. I got one more question. By a show of hands, how many of you thought this helped the Republican Party, what they saw tonight across the country? Raise your hands if it helped the GOP.
Nope.
None of you.
None. None of you. Nobody raised their hands.
Kim Jong-un is the Donald Trump of North Korea. He makes outlandish statements, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're true.
So what are they going to do over there? Let me say something to my fellow, I'll call you progressives. I myself am not a Democrat. I'm a Democratic Socialist. And quite a few of my friends are also to the left, but they do not like the term Democrat. So I will say, okay, fine. Let me talk to my fellow progressives. To my fellow progressives, we have made tremendous progress in the last 8 years. It does not mean that our work is done, but we have made tremendous progress. And it would be really great if we could get another Democratic president in there to continue that progress. And what we have right now with the Republicans is absolute crazyville. And you know what? Let them tear each other apart. Let them destroy each other in public. Let them keep talking about their penises and eating boogers and all the wacky things that they're doing. That's fine. Just let them go. This election, no matter who the candidate is, whether that be Hillary, whether that be Bernie, it's in the bag for the Democratic candidate. Democrats, progressives, we should back off of each other. Stop being so anti-Bernie or anti-Hillary or so pro the one that you hate the other. Stop! We're gonna win this election! And we're going to have the Supreme Court and the Justice Department and all these state governorships and legislators. And only if we stop fighting with each other and just let them tear each other apart. And to the Republicans that have been dismayed by what you've been seeing, you can go ahead and come over to this side. You can come over to the left side. You can vote for one of our candidates or you can just be positively affected by the policies of that particular person. Now, I understand Bernie and Hillary. Fine. We all want Bernie. But hey, there is a race going on right now. There's a contest going on, and we have to let that play out the way it's going to play out. But Republicans, go ahead and come on over here. We've got a couple of good candidates. We'll welcome you in. Hey, even Ted Cruz thinks Bernie's great.
Said for a long time, I like and respect Bernie Sanders because
Uh-oh, there you go. You're building them up. Hey, even that guy, who I'm sure disagrees wholeheartedly with Bernie. And remember, in Vermont, Senator Sanders overwhelmingly got the Democratic vote. And he got a nice chunk of the Republican vote as well.
A lot of Republicans like Bernie Sanders.
Now, this spells disaster for them. We've got to make sure to play this right. We got to make sure to be smart about this. Over there, they are now reaping what they've sown. They got the candidate that they wanted because of all the wacky things that they have been doing over the last number of years. And over here, we've got a good substantive race happening. Over there, children, 5-year-olds, playground bullies, even their own people say it. Over here, substances, issues, and substances. We can win this election if we decide to be the grown-ups in the room. We almost have this election in the bag. Democrats or Democratic-leaning folks, don't F it up. And I'm not trying to be mean. Onward. Forward. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got an election that we have to win.
Melvin, thanks for sharing that. That's amazing. That's just amazing.
Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com, but you can also find these shows on kiwistation.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users, and Kiwi Station also has an app. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity, Paul Ryan, in favor of prosperity, real prosperity, Paul Ryan. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin signing off, and now that I have woken you up, good morning.